Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hi there, and thanks for tuning in again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I want to talk about some of the basic ideas of the Nazi political system, which very often get obscured to us by the overwhelming and overbearing kind of figure of the Führer, and also various kind of mythologies and mythologizations that exist about Nazism. The Nazi political system is complicated, because obviously before January 1933 there is a pre-existing political system which Hitler enters as an insecure dictator with only a couple of Nazi colleagues in an otherwise conservative cabinet, and he then attempts to subvert various aspects of this system, which in the next 2 years he does quite successfully. And he introduces aspects of a new kind of parallel system of decision-making and policy execution, which is designed to undermine the previous bureaucratic and quasi-democratic processes of the later Weimar Germany. If you're studying Nazi Germany, perhaps the best series you can get for students are the Nazism Documentary Readers by Noakes and Pridham, and that's what I'm looking at today. Now, Noakes and Pridham argue that within the Nazi political system, there were two main features: the personal dictatorship under the charismatic leadership of Adolf Hitler, which means a dictatorship where authority is derived not from the tradition or from office, but from the personal figure of Hitler himself and the relationship that Hitler had as a figure with his supporters. Here we see the populist aspect of Nazism. What Hitler sought to do was to reach out beyond the constraints and confines of government and connect directly with the people. He believed himself as a racial populist to be the divine will of the German people, that history had kind of appointed him somehow in some sort of quasi-mystical process to be the interpreter of the wants of the German people. In addition to the figure of Hitler, Nazi Germany is also a one-party state. The Nazi Party had supreme political authority in nearly every sphere of public life and administration. So that's our starting point, that the politics in Nazi Germany were based around two poles, Führer and party. And that's how many Germans saw it. Often when things didn't work out very well, attention would be deflected away, or criticism would be deflected away from Hitler to the party. And Hitler was often seen as something distinct from the party, even though he was the leader of the Nazi party. People found it convenient to look to Hitler as a solution, and very often to criticise the party as a source of problems. This is quite a common process. One of the points that Noakes and Pridham effectively emphasise is the fact that the Nazi party claimed or demanded authority on all areas of government and public life. Whether they had it or not is a different matter, and a very nuanced and complex debate. The extent to which the party achieved political power and influence varied very much according to both period and to circumstances. So one of the ways in which we have to sort of shift away from our thinking about Nazi Germany, is a very common way of thinking about Nazi Germany, is that totalitarianism in Nazi Germany meant that every aspect of life was controlled. I mean, it was intended to be controlled, but not all dictatorships work like the well-oiled machines we assume that they are. Hitler's own personal power was, on paper, unlimited, but it faces a number of practical restrictions. There is, of course, as far as a lone autocrat goes, the impossibility of one individual actually knowing about the workings of every aspect of the state, let alone being able to influence all of them. And as I've previously said on many occasions, Hitler was quite an indolent, idle, dare I say even lazy dictator in the 1930s at the very least. He periodically intervenes decisively in certain matters, but in others, in many others, he's disinterested in bureaucracy. He doesn't like having to sign paperwork. He doesn't see himself as the kind of bureaucratic dictator that Stalin is. Instead, he sees himself as an inspirational figure, a man who should enjoy his leisure time and who simply needs to announce his will to the German people, and that it is when the people act in unison that change will occur. Hitler was one of those dictators whereby such a degree of informality existed in the manner in which Hitler acquired his information, and such a degree of chaos and contradiction existed, that very often formal channels for informing Hitler of necessary stuff, in the way in which all heads of state have people who work with them very closely to filter out things that are less important, bring the real priority decisions so that they can be acted right away, and then fed back to civil servants who go and do the enacting. This whole process for Hitler is really, really quite chaotic, and there is a lot that historians are lacking in information about it, particularly because Hitler didn't like to do things formally and liked to do things often verbally and therefore secretly. When you look at the hierarchies within Nazi Germany and the things and the various complicated pictures of who had official positions, it's often quite misleading. As, again, Noakes and Pridham point out, in a personal dictatorship such as Hitler's, the key to the acquisition and maintenance of power was the ability to persuade people that one was acting with the support of the dictator. The key to power, therefore, becomes access to Hitler, not simply as a means of securing influence over him, but as confirmation in the eyes of colleagues and rivals of one's own position within the regime. Therefore, titles only mean so much if you're not invited to the Berghof to see the Führer. Interestingly, in a primary source from Carl Schmidt, who was a constitutional lawyer, and Ernst von Weizsäcker, state secretary in the foreign ministry, it was pointed out that Hitler's chauffeurs became high dignitaries of the regime. They received the rank of Gruppenführer, a general's rank, a Gauleader who had access to Hitler, was politically more important than a Reich minister who did not see the head of state for years. Thus all concepts of a regulated and calculable distribution of responsibilities ceased to be applicable. It is this introduction of informality into the system and a very personalised rule. The source goes on. Hitler's personal position of power involved an immense claim to omnipotence, but also the claim of omniscience. His omnipotence existed to a large extent, in fact was highly effective. His omniscience, however, was purely fictitious. Hitler here, it's argued, was indeed all-powerful, but the idea that he's all-seeing is a fiction, one that I'm sure Hitler was happy to propagate, but one which ultimately didn't exist. Information that was available to Hitler was sifted and selected. He would have been unable to do anything at all if he'd had to do his own secretarial work. And so Hitler's decision-making was possible based on the information that was shown to him. So the filters, the kind of the gatekeepers to Hitler, are extremely important. The most significant of those is Hans Heinrich Lammers. Access to Hitler is extremely difficult for a number of reasons. Firstly, Hitler didn't like Berlin. Hitler had all sorts of strange obsessions about Berlin as this kind of cosmopolitan city that had been the centre of some kind of cosmopolitanism. He thought he was right in thinking it was an extremely socialist city. It was Red Berlin, as it was referred to in the 20s and 30s, obviously after the purge of the communists in February and March 1933. That comes to an abrupt end. But he was, throughout the Weimar period, he had looked with disgust at the decadence and the vice in Berlin as he saw it, and he thought it had been sort of tainted by the Jews and all these kinds of things. And he believed that the soul of Germany existed in Bavaria. So that's why he was at Berchtesgaden, his retreat, the Berghof, so often. And that meant that it was difficult to see him. It wasn't possible for government ministers just to turn up and speak to Hitler. You had to be invited. So you had to be one of the inner circle anyway. There were no cabinet meetings. There wasn't a formalised system of government at Berchtesgaden. Ministers might have to spend months, perhaps even years, without any access to Hitler. Some significant figures within the Third Reich would leave their functionaries, their kind of underlings, living in the town of Berchtesgaden and below the Berghof, so that there would be an opportunity at any time for them to ascend the mountain and see the Führer himself. And the trick was to be presenting the kinds of policy ideas that Hitler was going to be interested in. Hitler had a notoriously poor attention span and grew tired of what he viewed as trivial issues very quickly. He didn't understand very much about economics, agriculture, or other day-to-day matters of the running of the state. He was interested in architecture. He was interested in his position of quite often an imaginary position of being a striding European statesman. And he was interested in his notions of culture.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And this meant that his ministers and various underlings would devise policies that they thought would get them, would be most likely to get them an open door, or would be most likely to get them an audience and influence, and therefore a greater power within the regime. After 1930, when the party had become larger and far more successful, it had fought successful elections. It had dramatically expanded its bureaucracy. It had grown in order to cope with vast numbers of new members and to organise propaganda campaigns. This bureaucratic bureaucratic aspect to the party, the party's bureaucratic nature, didn't mean it was particularly well organised. It meant that there were large numbers of bureaucrats and organisers. There's still all sorts of scope for institutional chaos in there, particularly because the party, despite its bureaucratisation, still revolved around the initial figure of the charismatic leader. Really, it's not fascism or Nazism without that. The idea of the one leader leading the masses, inspired and able to see and understand the course of history in ways in which ordinary mortals cannot. These are some of the fundamental ideas behind all fascisms. And it was why, even as the party developed and evolved and got closer and closer to governing, that it wasn't going to leave behind this rather maverick, chaotic streak within it. And when this was applied to government, when government really becomes about charismatic leadership and a constant, ceaseless dynamism within Nazism, this is where you see policies become more and more radicalised, become sort of more kind of off the cuff. If you only need to look at the Nuremberg Laws in 1935 to see the extent to which those were really Hitler's shooting from the hip. And the dramatic escalation of racial policy and the crises of international diplomacy that this brings with it are really essential products of fascism itself. All authority falls in the hands of the Führer principle, the principle of leadership. Hitler had hoped that this would filter down throughout the rest of society, so local Nazi parties in different parts of Germany would be led by little Führers, those who had the strength to seize power instead of asking for it to be given to them. This, in theory, is meant to create a simple, clear-cut, hierarchical structure where orders from on high are obeyed as they are in the army without question. However, it doesn't. It doesn't create a simple system because there's already a pre-existing system of government there, and introducing an entirely new way of ordering society. And by the way, the previous existing system of government works extremely well. A German government by 1933 was perhaps the most effective and best functioning bureaucracy in the world. Hitler doesn't introduce order into the system, he introduces chaos. And he introduces chaos deliberately in order to undermine the functionings of government, because it was a way of undermining rival institutions and groups within government that might possibly challenge him, question him, or try to overrule him. Hitler is not a supreme Führer in January 1933. He is an insecure, authoritarian chancellor who is transitioning towards a dictatorship. But in January 1933, he's not there. He hasn't got absolute power, and there is no, it's not a given that he'll get it either. So the system of charismatic leadership is transferred like a kind of a virus, if you will, from the party to the state after January 1933. And it became the basis of the formulation of law within the Nazi regime. In 1934, when the offices of Chancellor and President are merged into the role of Führer, this is what Noakes and Pridham refer to as a constitutional turning point, where the idea of Führer power was defined. The theorist Ernst Rudolf Huber says, and he was a theorist of the Third Reich, constitutional theorist of the Third Reich, who said, "The office of Führer has developed out of the National Socialist movement. In its origins, it is not a state office. The fact must never be forgotten if one wishes to understand the current political and legal position of the Führer. The office of Führer has grown out of the movement into the Reich, firstly through the Führer taking over the authority of the Reich Chancellor, and then through his taking over the position of the head of state. Primary importance must be accorded to the position of Führer of the movement. It has absorbed the two highest functions of the political leadership of the Reich and thereby created the new office of Führer of the nation and of the Reich. The position of Führer combines in itself all sovereign power of the Reich, all public power in the state, as in the movement, is derived from the Führer power. If we wish to define political power in the Völkisches Reich correctly, we must not speak of state power, but of Führer power. For it is not the state as an impersonal entity which is the source of political power, but rather political power is given to the Führer as the executor of the nation's common will. Führer power is comprehensive and total, and it unites within itself all means of creative political activity. It embraces all spheres of national life. It includes all national comrades who are bound to the Führer in loyalty and obedience. Führer power is not restricted by safeguards and controls, by autonomous protected spheres and by vested individual rights, but rather it is free and independent, exclusive and unlimited." This is a fascinating document by a Nazi, a member of the regime, where he says that the office of Führer is not a state office. This is something from the movement. It doesn't even refer to the party here. It refers to the movement. It's this kind of organic expression of German will, and is this kind of entity from within the German people itself that has reached out and seized and kind of incorporated and assimilated the different offices of state and has suborned them to the notion of this kind of idea of Führer, which means leader, which is this kind of highly romanticized notion of a figure in charge, and that it is an office which is far more sovereign than anything that the state can envisage or represent. Hitler's absolute power does not come from a legal basis. It's not couched in rational legal terms. It's not a constitutional concept as Reich Chancellor and head of state were. Created from originally the Bismarck Constitution of 1871, anything that is constitutional in its very nature has limitations in it. And in the second part of that Huber statement, it points out that Führer transcends all limitations and doesn't recognise any of them. Instead of it being couched in bureaucratic and legalistic language, the notion of Führer is couched in highly romantic and abstract and emotive terms as a kind of an expression of Germanness itself, and therefore it can know no boundaries because it comes. It is pursuing the office of Führer is pursuing particular imagined. Historical mission, a journey to a kind of a German redemption, an eschatology to the German end of history where Germany has resolved its crises. And the idea of Führer is therefore a uniquely Nazi one, or a uniquely fascist one anyway. You can see it represented and sort of replicated in notions of the Duce in Italy. But it shows you one thing, or one of many things about Nazism, that Nazism, whilst it uses the levers of legality and legal systems and sort of subordinates legal systems to its illegality, Nazism doesn't really recognise the legitimacy of law, of processes, of limits, of balances, of any aspects of the kind of the modern development of government at all. Instead, it views only one thing, race, as being sacrosanct. And against race, there can be no argument. And if there is one appointed leader of the race, there can be no debate with that and no limitation on its power. Okay, well, this is a slightly shorter podcast today because we're focusing on just on one issue, the question of the Führer. But we're going to come back and look a bit more at Nazism as we go on. It's one of the, on our little themes. I do recommend the Noakes and Pridham series if you're a student of Nazi Germany, or you're just an armchair reader and you'd really like to understand Nazi Germany in depth. The Noakes and Pridham books, you can find them, not the readers series, there's about four of them. You can find them on any decent bookshop website. Please always do try to use an independent, do try to use a bricks and mortar bookshop if you're buying them. And they're the kinds of things that serious professional historians have in their arsenal of primary source documents on Nazi Germany. Okay, so I'm going to sign off there. If you caught the previous podcast I put out on hate speech, it'd be great if you can give me a feedback on that one so we can make some decisions there. And also, if you can give us a good write-up on iTunes, it really, really does help the podcast. And do visit our Patreon page as well if you can find it. Thanks very much, and I'll catch you soon. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.